Now it's time for Inspirational Women and my guest, Dr. Amra Sabich Al-Reyes, professor at Columbia University and author of a new book, Three Summers. Dr. Amra Sabich Al-Reyes, good morning. I'm so grateful to have you join us today.
Well, thank you for inviting me to be with you today and being open to continuing our conversation from a few years back when we talked about The Cat I Never Named.
Yes, which was a wonderful book, an important story, just as Three Summers is. And it really is a life journey. We go through the highs and the lows. And that's why I think you're such an exceptional storyteller, is because you tell the truth. There's no varnishing it. You speak from your heart, your experiences. And so this is really important. And I know it is for you. Share with us the reason that you feel so compelled to share the stories.
Well, the reason really dates back to a number of years ago when my third grader at the time, my younger daughter, Dina, came back home from school. And she's this just happy, happy young woman now and a little girl back then, who had these big ponytails and a lot of bows in her hair and loved seahorses. And she came home one day very sad. And I immediately knew that something had happened in school. And I asked her, Dina, is everything okay? And she said to me, Mom, when Dad and you are rounded up because you Muslims, what will happen to me and Jana, her older sister? And that was the moment that shook me. We just experienced earthquake in New York City. And for me, it was a personal earthquake and a wake-up call. I always thought that I didn't need to speak out and explain how dangerous hate is and how dangerous a pathway towards genocide is. I thought that it is understood, but it is not. And for me, speaking about my own experiences during the genocide, which is captured in The Cat I Never Named, and prior to the genocide itself, which is now a story I tell in Three Summers, is critically important in America today and around the world because hate is on the rise. This narrative of us versus them is a very dangerous narrative that destroyed my life before, that took people I had loved deeply and profoundly out of my life simply for who they were. They were killed, targeted. I was on a list to be taken to a rape camp as a young girl who was Bosnian Muslim. I was perceived to be a form of ethnic racial impurity, to be eradicated from Europe. Those are very dangerous ideas and stories can kill. And I've experienced that. And so for me, it is really important one day when I'm not here to leave behind for the next generations and share these stories with the current generations on how ideas and words can ultimately seek to justify hate-fueled violence.
And in that, I'm sure there is the hope that with a younger generation open to hearing the stories and realizing that there is a place of choosing what they believe and how to move forward, we have the power. I had certainly believed we had the power decades ago to really turn things around, that we wouldn't be reliving what we are today. So you do live with that hope too, do you not?
If I didn't have profound sense of hope that we can do better, that we can be better, I wouldn't be writing these stories. Mm. For me, hope is a home of possibilities. For me, hope is walking into a classroom of middle graders, which I owe, or high schoolers, or college students, or doctoral students, which is something that I do almost every day, and seeing their passion to change the world for better. So I think stories of resilience to hate, like Three Summers, like The Cat I Never Named, are the stories where I hope to share my hope and vision for a better world. And the key to that is to invite the readers to partake in changing the world with me. I can't do it alone. You can't do it alone, Kate. But the power within us is to come together as human beings and say, hate is unacceptable, irrespective of who it may be directed at.
Oh, yes. And you really do well in both books. And certainly we are seeing it in Three Summers. You're sharing more of yourself of, you know, I think the despair that you felt when your older brother died. I can't even imagine that because you're so young. You're only 11 years old. And I mean, we don't think of that happening. And yet then you share with us how hope was brought back to us, how we are important to each other, sharing the stories and walking arm in arm together. That's part of where the hope comes from.
That's correct. And I often say that hope isn't only in exercising your voice and sharing your own story, but also receiving stories from people who are different than ourselves. And that is what transpires in Three Summers with me, as you shared, after I lose my brother. And my family goes through this profound shock and loss, that I meet my cousins, who really become closer than sisters over the course of Three Summers. And what's unique about a group of five girls who come together is that we are each very, very different from one another in the way that we speak, in the way that we behave, in the way we think, in terms of our background socioeconomically, in terms of our ethnic backgrounds. My favorite cousin, Jana, one of the main characters in the book, her father was a high-ranking military officer in the army that eventually partook in the atrocities in former Yugoslavia and even in Bosnia. So there is this power of love and sisterhood that I experienced during these magical summers that really sustained me during the genocide that followed.
And I think what that does for us, here it is, the sharing of stories, I think, and why it's so important when we can really experience how dire and how low life can be, how we then do engage with each other, how we have that power within us. We all have it, so that we need to find it to use it in this uplifting, positive way.
You know, for me, and this is something that I had realized as I was writing this book, this story, because these are the three best summers of my life. Nothing compares to them. They were magical. I was a child, even though there's these rumblings of hate in the adult world that are affecting us, and I begin to recognize the narratives of hate emerging. This love, the connection that seemed endless and so deep that I feel with these sisters of mine, was a place of recognition that actually it is in the ordinary beauty of life that extraordinary resides. We often think something incredible has to happen to us to achieve the ambition, the ultimate goal, to this final destination of happiness. But once you survive something as extreme as genocide, you realize and recognize that it is those seemingly ordinary moments when you laughed as hard as you could, or you had a great meal with best friends, and that those small moments are the most important moments in our lives, that continue to give us that sense of hope that life can be happy again.
And it really is important to hold on to that, because I think of this, the war, the genocide occurred, it's 30 years ago, within this 3 decades ago, which is really still really so recent. But I think back to World War II was 50 years prior to that. I think we were feeling That had to be it. We were done with the hate and the extermination that went on. And yet here we were in the 1990s doing it again. We really have to hold on to hope. But it's how do we help to change that? Can we turn that around so we don't have to repeat more and more of that killing, that senseless waste of life?
I think we can. I think we can. And for me, the pathway to change is education. I think at times we shy away in educational spaces from having genuine, honest conversations with one another. We shy away from seeking and building places of community across intersectionally, across different groups. We often tend to resort to our tribe, our ethnicity, our race, our socioeconomic background, or some aspect of our identity. But for me, I feel I belong to human race. And if we can inspire kids in the classrooms to believe that they have as much humanity as Amra in Three Summers, or as Jana in Three Summers, or as Kate, I think we can begin to see one another as equal. And I believe that we can't move past hate and genocides until we arrive at this point of recognizing that our differences, our diversity as a human within the human race is actually what gives beauty to life. It is what gives happiness to life. It is what gave me hope during genocide when I was so profoundly hated by Serb nationalists that not every Serb hated me, because I could go back and reflect to my love for my cousin who was half Serb and half Muslim, who loved me dearly and who I believe still loves me dearly. And that is where we have to, as a society, as the world, as human race, that is where we need to get to. And we're not there yet, unfortunately.
No, we are not. Sometimes it feels like we're slipping back, but we can't stay in that place. As you share the stories, all of us need to move forward and share the stories, our own stories, share with each other to see where there is a common experience. There are differences which we should celebrate, but I know there are factions that, you know, want to hate those differences for some strange reason, but we need to really trust and hope, believe that those differences are good, and to love them, that it's not one is better than the other. We, as you say, it's the humanity. We're being the human race together.
Absolutely. And as I already shared, I think a way to do it, to achieve it, is to flood classrooms with the stories of resilience to hate, like Three Summers. That is why I write memoirs, so that kids in fifth and sixth grade or seventh grade or high school reading these stories today can self-reflect and think about words that they use, actions that they take every day. It is about our everyday behavior towards one another that ultimately defines who we are. It is about being nice to someone in a supermarket when we're buying groceries and asking them how their day was. It is surprising people with these ordinary acts of kindness that can truly be infectious and have the effect that we recognize one another as a human being, not as the other.
And the beauty of both of your books, The Cat I Never Named, but now Three Summers, while it is for a young adult reading, well, it's not the reading level, it is, but it's that age group, I feel it really can be read by all and appreciated because, well, stories get to us. But I think there's a way we can relate, even though it's teenage years. We were all teenagers at some point. And so I think there's that way we can relate and, yeah, then transfer it to today, to whatever age we are and whoever we're dealing with.
You're absolutely right. And when I write my stories, I don't think of them as written for a particular age. I think of them as stories that travel through my own lived experience and share key lessons that I have learned about hate and how to prevent hate and hate-fueled violence. So, when Three Summers is classified as a book that can be read by very young readers, it simply means that the language that I use is carefully crafted to ensure that it can be digested. Even some complicated ideas that I bring in terms of hate and tensions that are happening in the background as I'm growing up and enjoying my summers with my cousins and falling in love and so on. The language that is used is such that it is appropriate for even very young readers. But the ideas are relevant to each and every individual, irrespective of their age.
Oh, yes. And so the book is just very new, but certainly you've used it, I'm sure, or shared it in some public spaces.
It is starting to happen, and it has been very, very exciting. So earlier this week, I was at the International House in New York City, where scholars from all over the world live and come together. And as I shared with them, you are the brain power of the world. You have capacity individually and as a collective to make this world a better and safer place for all of us. And so I did a reading for them, and we talked about ideas in Three Summers. And this was my second conversation with that particular group of scholars and students. We talked about the cat I never named in the past. And then yesterday morning, I was in a classroom, actually a school assembly at the school, also in New York, where I was interviewed by fifth, sixth, and seventh graders about some really big ideas who have read The Cat I Never Named and who will be now reading Three Summers. So that is already happening, and it is very, very exciting for me to see how students in America, young change makers in America, recognize their own stories and their own struggles in the story of Amra. Who grew up in the former Yugoslavia and Bosnia and survived genocide, but they can link them and see sort of mirror images of the hate I had experienced then with some of the events happening around the globe today.
So that is heartening that they are seeing that. And that's what it is to keep germinating the ideas in a younger generation who will take it forward and share it. And that's where, again, it's very hopeful. And we need to hang on to that and continue to nurture that and move it forward.
Absolutely. I'll share with you that I wrote my author's note. It's every time I finish a story, it's a bittersweet feeling because I'm happy that I have told yet another story and shared it with the world, but I'm also sad to part with the process of telling the story. And the author's note for Three Summers, I wrote on a plane while traveling back to Bosnia. I felt this need to go back to my city of Bihać, which is the central place in Three Summers and also The Cat I Never Named. And I went back to visit locations mentioned in Three Summers. And at the very end of my author's note, I specifically invite my readers to self-reflect and to think about the role that they can play in helping me through storytelling, through nonviolent means and activism, stop current genocides or prevent future genocides from happening in the world. And for that reason, I think stories are incredibly empowering because they can inspire people. We talked about at the beginning of our conversation today how stories can inspire hate and label people in such a way that they're perceived as the other, that they're perceived as the target that should be eradicated. But stories also have this immense power to, in fact, counter hate, undermine hate, dismantle hate. And that can be done not only by telling stories like Three Summers, but also embracing them in our communities, in our book clubs, in our classrooms.
Yes, underscoring that because we then ask why? Why should this happen? And what role? What can I do? Because we all can, as you said, at the supermarket, we can just ask someone, how they are doing and simply be kind, be charitable toward them.
Yes, I always say in many of my lectures, one identity isn't a category, it's a story. And approach a person not with judgment, not with assumptions about them, but with curiosity. Often when I walk into a room and people see me for the first time, we haven't met in person, Kate, so you don't know that I am 6 feet tall and I'm a fair-skinned, currently blonde. I used to be a redhead woman. And so when I walk into the room and people expect a genocide survivor who's Muslim, I disrupt their preconceived notions because assumptions and biases and stereotypes have been propagated for so long in narratives in the Western world about Muslims. And so people get confused and they approach me with questions that ultimately lead to their own transformation because they get to hear stories of survival, but also resilience to hate. And they get to understand that 1.9 billion Muslims in the world are so beautifully diverse as much as any other group of people, and that we need to approach one another through bridge building, through conversations, through engagement, through sharing our humanity with one another, that we all, in fact, belong to one race, human race.
Yes. And as you say, we have not met in person, but certainly through the stories, I'm aware of your really elegant height and how, you know, in a different world, maybe if you'd been born and lived here, you'd probably be a fashion model just because of your physique and your beauty. And yet, you know, that same height was something that was scorned and kids picked on you for it. And it's amazing how. No, it's heartbreaking how we can choose just something that's different from us to say it's horrible when it's not. It's the individual, you know, and maybe that's a place to even think of, you know, our height is controlled by our heritage, you know, by my parents. I'm a shorter statured woman. You know, people can make fun of me for that, but why must we do that? Can we not turn that around, talk about that, and find just joy in celebrating the things that we have done and the things that we are doing.
Absolutely. And, you know, this is for me a question of where we derive our sense of self and how self-aware we are of who we are relative to the rest of the world and how aware we are of our own community. And this question that you raise, which is critically important, why is it that in our communities, particularly when we talk about young people and these experiences that I share even in Three Summers, not only about my height, but my brother,
Yes.
who Amar, who died unfortunately very young, he had Marfan syndrome, which is a rare disorder. And I watched and witnessed in pain how much he was targeted and bullied for how he looked. And that was for me the first time in my life as a very young girl. When I recognized that the world at times tends to see one aspect of our identity, one feature of our identity, and puts us in a category, when in reality, none of us belong to a singular category. There's so much richness in our lives, in our emotions, in our experiences, in our thoughts, but that is often not seen. So with Amar, he was bullied for being born with Marfan syndrome. But I got to understand and got to know my brother as someone who was brilliant, who taught himself Chinese, who was an incredible guitar player, who had an exceptionally high IQ, who had so many dreams for what he wanted to achieve in his life. And he did not get the chance to live life to the fullest because he died too early. And it was a blessing to learn by being his sister, being in his presence for the years that he had lived. And when I see individuals make faulty assumptions about someone because of who they are, I feel only more compelled to be resilient, to hate, to educate, to write my stories. And sometimes it's painful. It is very difficult. I'm holding tears back as I speak now. It's hard to talk about times when we were vulnerable or hurt or when we lost people we loved, and know that other human beings felt compelled to hurt them simply for who they are. But that is precisely why I want to tell these stories. I often say I didn't survive genocide to not tell them and to be silent, but to educate and hopefully change the world, at least in some small ways that I can.
And there is no greater purpose than to show that resiliency. I think between that time of watching your brother struggle and how other kids just were so hateful, for you to be able to rise above that, to come from the genocide, which was another torturous time, and be the really compassionate, beautiful human being, human woman you are, sharing and encouraging us to look at that. I think there too, you are living hope for all of us that we can overcome that. You could have perhaps gone down a hateful path, but you didn't. And that shows us we can all be looking toward being kind, generous, loving, and welcoming.
Well, thank you. Thank you, Kate, for those kind words. I don't think I'm in any way perfect as a human being. I'm far from it. But what I am open to is learning and trying to be better every day. Can I be a better parent? Can I be a better friend? Can I be a better teacher? Can I be a better storyteller? And I think having that aspiration and hope that I can, and being willing to try, is very important. That's the beginning of change. In education, as a scholar, I often look at this notion of transformative learning. How do we actually transform as human beings on an individual level? We often transform when we experience shocks in our life, whether it's a loss of my brother, or shock of going through genocide, and multiple experiences that were adversities that I had survived. Each of those experiences compelled me to self-reflect and ask this fundamental question. You ask, who do I want to be? Do I want to be like the people who target me, who hate me, or do I want to be something else? And to me, hate is a choice. It's not innately in us to feel hate. It is a choice. It is something that we educate people into. Racism, othering, dehumanization, those are narratives that we expose young people, adults to, and they can be adopted. And when adopted, can be very dangerous. But those are choices that we make. And if there's one choice I never want to make, and that is to hate even those who hated me. I'm just going to share with you one story. When I was a graduate student at Columbia School of International Public Affairs, I was asked to work on a project for International Organization for Migration. That was an international NGO that was working on reintegrating former soldiers in Bosnia following the genocide into civil society. And many of these programs exist around the world. The idea is that no one wants to have former soldiers who have nothing to do. You want to make sure that they integrate into civilian life so that they do not resort to violence, because that is what they had learned. So this means that I was asked to help soldiers who, for the most part, were killing, targeting my people, my family, who changed my life, destroyed my life, bombed my home, who made my mom become deaf, who killed my relatives, and so on. And I asked my professor at the time if I could reserve the right to withdraw in case that I feel hate. I didn't know how will I, to be very honest, I didn't know, will I hate these individuals? How will I react to them when I meet them? And I knew they would know, because I'm obviously a native speaker of Bosnian, and I have a Muslim name, distinctly Muslim name. Amr means the builder, creator in Arabic, the one who creates, who builds. So I knew they would know who I was. And I worked really hard to help these former soldiers with the work, with the research that we did. And then one soldier called me on a particular day, and he was sobbing on the phone. I was in the office in Sarajevo for International Organization for Migration, and he was crying. He couldn't stop crying. And he asked me, why did you help me? He was almost upset with me for helping him. And I said, I helped you because that is the purpose of this project. He was trying to get the cow. He was a farmer. He wanted to get the cow. He couldn't. And so I talked to the people in the office to see how he could be helped. And then he said, you helping me made me have worse nightmares. I know what I did to people like you, and you helping me makes me feel only worse. And I told him that what he did to me or to my people is not what I wish to do to anyone else. And that for me, he was one of the best lessons I could receive in life. And that was the moment when I realized that I couldn't hate back. I had no anger. I had no hate. I just knew that I could not be anything like someone who was killing me during those years in 1990s.
Oh, what a powerful story, and the example of what we can do when we choose to not perpetuate the hate and to be an example of good and what can be of the world. We have that within us. And I am so grateful to you, Dr. Amra, for sharing your stories, for your passion for this, for your honesty and authenticity. I am just, so grateful. Let's share with people. The book is available, your website, so that they can get more information.
First of all, thank you, Kate, for having me here. Thank you for this beautiful conversation, and I hope we'll continue to have conversations in the future. I do a lot of work on violence and hate prevention, so your listeners can find me in many different ways. One of them is going to my website, personal website, which is sabicelrayess.org. So my last name, sabicelrayess.org. That is my personal website. They can find links there. And of course, Three Summers is available really everywhere in all of the major bookstores, independent bookstores, and of course, major websites and stores online.
It's a must read for yourself, for your family. Share it with friends, book clubs. And again, Dr. Amra, I'm so grateful we've had this opportunity to have a conversation once again.
Thank you so very much, Kate. Thank you.
That brings us to the end of a very full hour of Inspirational Women with Dr. Amra Sabicelrayess and Sunday Morning Magazine with Kevin Dixon. I'm Kate Daniels, your host, and I greatly appreciate your sharing this hour with me and these special guests. For details you might have missed or information you'd like to know, please just send me an email, kated@warm1069.com, and I will get right back to you. Also, if you'd like to listen again or to share these important stories with your family and friends, find the podcast on our Warm 1069 webpage. Just click on the Listen tab, then Podcasts, followed by either of the show names, and then look for the guest names. I now wish you and your family a day of interest in and support of all our neighbors and community. Have a week of the same, and then please plan to join me again next weekend for another hour of Sunday Morning Magazine and Inspirational Women on Warm 106.9. Good morning.